Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 234. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning. That sounds like Ben Tenna.
Yeah. Phil Wilson.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. And our buddy Graham is selling his troll dolls at some fair. No, I don't know. I don't know if he's actually making troll dolls. Well,
doesn't his wife make those little apple faces that are like, it's, you know, like scrunched up?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, they get shrunk up and they're like little apple cores and she like paints little faces on them.
I don't know. She probably has grandpa's, but
let's just say that she does. How's that?
Yeah, all right.
Sure.
All right. We should actually find out what she actually makes, because I'm sure it's probably pretty interesting.
Yeah. Oh, we should. Well, you know what? I'm wondering why Graham doesn't have an e-commerce site.
You know? Yeah. So next time, Phil, you've got to remember this. Next time, ask Graham what his wife makes. What they're spending all of these Saturday mornings.
Do you suppose he's on Etsy? They're on Etsy.
I hope so, because I want to link to it and see what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for our show today. We'll join you next week.
That was a short one.
It's the Graham Thicken show.
Yeah, Steve mentioned on the just before we started that he'd like to do a short show, but I got to tell you that usually when he says that, we go about 15 minutes long. So
get ready.
No. All right. So let's jump into it. So Phil, you and Graham and I went down to Tech Cocktail, Minneapolis.
Yes, we had cocktails with the tech intelligentsia. I don't know. The money part of tech, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was down at, pardon me. It was down at Open Book.
Yep. Which is a great space.
Which is a great space.
And Jim Garrison put together I guess this is a national thing, the tech cocktail concept, where you basically get a bunch of tech folks together with a bunch of financial folks and try to make a marriage made in heaven.
Right. Well,
they enjoy cocktails together.
Yep. And this was a precursor to an event that Tech Cocktail holds nationally, so that anybody that signs up for one of these local events has an opportunity to vie for the national event. So it's really an on-ramp to that as well.
Yep.
And
it was seven little startup pitches, which was kind of nice. It was the 30-second, it was the elevator pitch. So we can put that together real quickly. So,
and then we could go and visit with there. Them.
And then the concept was just to really socialize with them. I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
So any Internet of Things kind of stuff, or any mobile apps, or what were the startups?
Well, there was the one that really stood out. You know, there was one called Fan Tools and Book Bottles and Zing String, and there's several different
V-Bench.
Yeah. V-Bench was one, which is a local talent site, so you can. You know, free agency is accelerating like crazy. One of them that was kind of interesting was the one that did the police.
The ability to securely upload, you know, evidence or photos and
in the app
and stuff. Yeah, in the app.
Oh,
for officers to use on crime scenes. So
right,
was very CSI there for a minute. So
yeah,
it was good.
Good event.
Yeah.
Smaller than I thought it would be, but it was good.
And then I want to just highlight quickly, you know, I dashed over to the Red Stamp Acquisition Party, which was sponsored by, or was held at Dev Jam, and was actually put together, by the folks over at tech.mn that also talked about, one of the ways to get into it was to make a donation to bridge.mn, which is their charity wing, which was, I thought was an interesting concept. I really only mentioned it since it was an interesting concept to put together an event that not only brings tech people together to just, you know, celebrate, for example, this sort of thing, but also as an opportunity to raise a little money for a charity, which I thought was great. So,
yeah.
I'd actually never been over to Dev Jam, which is very much like a, you know, it's co-working space. So, very intimate area space to be in. It was used to be a coffee shop for years in a very, you know, in a neighborhood setting. And they're basically doing a co-working space now. And I thought it was a very nice place to be. So.
Well, I've seen photos of it. I haven't been there, but they've got a bar, right?
Yeah, it's been, you know, because it used to be a, you know, a coffee house. So there's a bar in the middle, and they've adapted that to basically a workspace. And then there's a bunch of tables and secluded areas and things where you can work. I really like it. I thought it was a really nice space to be in.
Now, where is it exactly?
On 46th Street, and I can't, you know, in on West 46th, and I can't.
Nicollet?
You know, it's farther west than Nicollet.
Okay.
You know, it's in the neighborhoods. It's close to the lake, so yeah. Not too far anyway. But well, I enjoyed that. It was an interesting space to be in. I get a chance to meet the folks at Red Stamp and find out about a little bit of their growth trajectory now that they've been purchased by the Mankato company.
Yeah. Cool.
So anyway, yeah, it was good.
Well, the one thing I wanted to just spend just a minute on is the Grace Hopper event that was here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
And the reason, one of the reasons that, I mean, I've known of Grace Hopper, gosh, ever since I've been in the computing arena, right? Back in the early 80s. And
back in the day.
But what I did not know was that my brother-in-law, who was also had been with NASA and had also done some secret work, we don't know what, and done a bunch of other stuff. We're out to dinner one night, and he's talking about how he used to office three doors down from Grace Hopper when he was in, I don't know, Tennessee or something at Oak Ridge. And it was just fascinating to hear these stories. But I really didn't know much about her until maybe 2 years ago, and read the Wikipedia article, and was like, oh my God, is this woman, I mean, she should be held in esteem like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. I mean, she has just really done some really fundamental stuff. And so this event, one of the other things I didn't know, because I didn't go because I'm male, is that there were 46.
You didn't, you know, don't use that as a cowboy.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Because there were guys there. Anybody could go. But there were 4,600 people there. We'll put a link in the show notes to the TechCrunch video, because women from Google and Facebook and all kinds of Bay Area companies and the TechCrunch people came and covered it and so on. And it's a pretty enlightening video if you have a chance to take a look at that. So pretty cool.
It's great to have that event in the cities. It's great.
Yeah. Well,
nice to see.
Yeah, and speaking of our buddies at Code 42, Julio just absolutely.
Wait a minute. How did you come up with that segue? Because we weren't speaking about Code 42.
Well, we were before.
We were thinking about
Code 42.
We were.
All right, that was a horrible segue.
It was an awful segue. And you're doing it again. You're reading off the list. Now stop.
Okay. Let me sit back, have a cup of coffee, and sip of my coffee.
Hey, so, did you guys hear about Code 42?
What were those guys doing at Code 42?
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
And that was a big deal. I mean, I have a very close relationship with Justin Grammons and Champ Schroeder, who are bigwigs over there at Code 42. And they've been working feverishly for months on this release. And, you know, I think they've been napping ever since, I believe they launched it on Wednesday. They've been napping ever since. No, Tuesday. So they've been napping ever since.
But, yeah.
It's interesting to see. Have you guys had a chance to check out SharePlan, which is what they've rolled out in addition to their CrashPlan platform?
Not yet. No.
No, I mean, other than just reading about it on their website. No.
Yeah.
No.
It's very nice. These are both of the local press clippings of the thing talk a lot about being in the Dropbox and Box space. And this, I think, is a little bit more. Yes, it is file sharing, but it is synced file sharing, and it's across multiple devices, and it's on a very secure and in a very secure environment. So I think it's a little bit more. It's a more robust version, or more, I don't know, protected version of file sharing. And I mean, the fact that you can share and sync files and set up sharing and syncing automatically across many devices, and they're all native in nature. They're not,
yeah.
You know, they're not, these are native software pieces. They're just, it's really a nice, slick system. I'm really looking forward to it being available on the, it's only available on the enterprise level right now, but I'd like to, I can't wait till the consumer level is out.
I got the impression from Julio's story that that companies can, you know, put the data on their own infrastructure. They don't have to use what Code 42 provides, which gives them some differentiation from Dropbox and Google Drive, right?
Well, yeah.
So that's
what's
much more important now that we know that, you know, that there's backdoors to the NSA on all of these services. Sure. So,
well, precisely. Well,
and want to, you know, security, this is a great solution.
Well, and here's what I found interesting. So I've been reading about developers who are really starting to have issues with the Dropbox API and how creating a folder from the app, you can end up having access to other folders. And of course, nothing is encrypted on Dropbox. And box.net, now box.com, they bought the URL. They do, in fact, encrypt. But here's the big differentiation that I see with Code 42 versus Box, is Box is all about the high end. I mean, they're all about the enterprise. That's really what they care about at the end of the day. And in my view, because I've used both, they don't really get individual users. And that's kind of the core competency of Code 42, is that it's actual humans who are sitting maybe in their home office and they're backing up stuff to crash plan. So they get the devices, they get the UIs, they understand what an individual user requires. And I think that's going to be a huge point of differentiation for them.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's a very slick interface and it looks very robust. So I'm happy for, you know, friends who have put together a product that is delivering on what it's supposed to do. We'll see how the uptake goes. They start their road shows. They'll start, you know, selling it now.
Yeah, yeah.
So since we started the podcast, you know, we've been talking about breakout startups in Minnesota, and I really think Code 42 is going to be that one, that first, you know, really huge exit company.
I do
what
too.
What is that point of success? Where does that?
Well, they have They have a really good product. They've built it over years. They've got, you know, a strong fan base that's across the world. They've built it organically instead of trying to go out and get a lot of money and, you know, build it that way.
Yeah, but when you get 53 million, you know, 52.5 million, that's a good hunk of change. So
yeah, true. But I mean, they didn't. It wasn't one of those startups that started with a bang. It kind of, you know, it started small and they got to a place and then
they just built a business. Yeah,
it's a 7-year overnight success.
Yeah,
right. So when you think about that, this would be a very attractive target to some, you know, a company like Apple, who doesn't do what Code 42 does very well, but has interests in mobile devices and backup, you know, all this kind of stuff.
So I
think that that's a very likely acquisition target at some point, maybe not soon, but at some point in the future.
So is that what we basically say is the achievement of success for a startup is either they've been acquired or they've gone public? Is that the definition of success, you know, providing?
Well, no, I think they've been very successful.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I look at it.
But I'm saying that to be that breakout startup sort of thing which we haven't really had here, they have to have a big exit like that. So it's either an IPO or an acquisition.
Hey, I don't know. I'm very satisfied with a startup that grows into a company that employs people and keeps the local economy going and just operates a great business. And that's what they're doing. I mean, I suppose, yeah, the ultimate success is, yeah, we've made a ton of money for the founders. Right?
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So I suppose I'm sure
the founders are doing okay though.
Yeah, they're doing fine. Yeah, they
built a fine business.
Yeah, and I'm pretty impressed with the fact that they've built a business that continues to grow and continues to innovate and continues to build products. So.
Well, the one piece that you did not mention, Tim, even though you did kind of at the outset, is it's, you know, any entrepreneur will tell you that it's all about timing, and their timing couldn't be more perfect to roll this out now.
It with seems all like they back knew doors all this and NSA stuff, and they built this great product.
Yep.
Maybe they did. Maybe they were following all this, the crazy conspiracy guys that I follow, because I knew about the NSA thing for like years.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they do that, and then they said, let's build a product, and then we'll time it exactly to be at the right point.
Right. Well, the one thing
right after they cracked down on the Silk Road and put them out of business.
yeah.
Right after they show that the NSA can crack the Tor server system.
Yeah.
That's the point we're going to come out with this.
Well, but making Steve Borsch nervous.
Well, but here's the one thing that I don't see. Is that, you know, all these services, LavaBit, the Onion Router, you know, the Tor service, all these things exploded after the NSA stuff came out. I mean, LavaBit was getting something like 18,000 new signups per day. And as we know now, because of the revelations that the LavaBit founder, and for those listening, LavaBit is the secure encrypted email provider that Edward Snowden was using. And the government came to the LavaBit founder, who was basically one guy running this thing out of his apartment on a server somewhere. And they basically demanded that he turn over the encryption keys so that they could decrypt everyone's email, all the accounts. And he ultimately ended up just shutting the service down and erasing it to protect everybody. And so that's the one thing that I haven't been able to figure out from their website is, you know, somewhere somebody's got to have the keys to encrypt stuff. And the one thing that they did say here is a flexible security model gives you the option of keeping encryption keys with an on-site master. And so what that tells me is that stuff can be encrypted locally and then synced. And if they do, in fact, do that, it's going to be huge. So...
Well, that's the way that their software works now, is that it's because, you know, you're backing up to your friend's computer, and they've had this for years where it does encrypt on your end first, and then it goes to the other side. Mm-hmm. And you've got the keys on your end to decrypt it. So the other guy, even though he has access to physically to the drive, he can't do anything with the data because it's the keys aren't there to unencrypt it. So this new product, I'm sure, uses the same technique. So yeah. It's very, very secure. And I'm sure that the folks at the NSA will have some trouble to try to crack this.
Well, but who knows? It's innovation going on. So I think it's I wish them the best of luck. It's going to be good.
So do you know Phil, where they host everything? Because there was that story about the, you know, Savvis is going to be building their 100,000 square foot data center in Shakopee.
I think they keep it in a van down by the river. I'm not really sure.
Which is just a power cord running from a local school.
That's
Yeah.
It's a really nice Dell machine. But other than that, I don't know.
All right.
By Starbucks where they get a really good free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, free Wi-Fi. Free Wi-Fi. Frugal. They're nothing if not frugal.
Oh, man.
But you do mention that data center. What I found interesting about this new data center, you know, being built is, you know, what do you suppose the attraction is of the Southwest Metro? What's up with that? Is that, are they like getting great tax deals on building these centers there, or what's drawing everybody to that? They got a power, that section of the power grid can hold a whole bunch of, you know, added energy consumption and that sort of thing.
I think it's all about the cost of the land. Because there's so much land out there and it's relatively inexpensive. And now the freeway access has really gotten pretty good. And there's discussion about extending Highway 312 that now runs from 494 through Eden Prairie. And then down all the way down to Chaska and extending that across the river.
Mm. You do need some serious power grid access though.
Oh yeah, right. You do. I was, Chandler, do you realize, did you know that on any given moment or at any given time, a data center is using about 6 to 12% of their power to actually do, you know, run the computer or, you know, run a process in the computer?
And everything else is what? Cooling?
Everything else is just sitting there, idling, waiting.
Huh.
That's it. Yeah, it's, I found it really interesting. I was reading an article in the New York Times that talked about the power consumption of data centers, and the quote unquote little secret about what really is going on. You know, there's a lot of waste in data centers as far as power waste, because so much is spent on just keeping the servers on but idling. They call that when the server is comatose, that it's just sitting there not doing anything. It's just waiting for the possibility that it may have to come to life. So it's kind of interesting. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But I was just sort of curious about, what the lure was of the Southwest Metro, other than, it's not too far from Steve's house.
Yeah, they want me to come down and check on it and make sure it's running. So I drive by every once in a while.
You drive by that Starbucks.
Yeah. Exactly. Make sure their Wi-Fi router is running.
You're
right. Say, by the way, speaking of which, this is totally off topic, but I was just in a coffee shop that shall remain nameless, and the Wi-Fi kept getting knocked out, and it was down in that direction. That's why I'm mentioning it. But I know the guy that runs it, so I don't want to call him out. But at any rate, the Wi-Fi kept getting knocked out. And finally, I said, hey, by the way, I wonder if it's because of the cordless phone. And the guy that I was with got up and talked to the owner and asked him what kind of phone they had. And this exact same thing happened at a Dunn Brothers in Eden Prairie, where every time the phone rang or anytime anybody picked up the phone, the Wi-Fi would get knocked out. It's because they were using a 240 gigahertz cordless phone.
I hadn't paid that much attention to that. That makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. So the frequencies, and they were on the same frequency, so it kept knocking out the Wi-Fi.
Interesting.
And so anyway, they ended up going out and buying a decked phone, and the decked 6.0 standard, and boom, everything. Life was wonderful. Isn't that weird?
Is odd.
Yeah,
that is odd. But you carried on, I'm sure.
Yeah, no question.
No question.
So, is there anything going on in startup land? Anybody doing anything on Kickstarter or
there's this company in Rochester called NimbleLink, and they were one of the semifinalists for the Minnesota Cup this year,
mm-hmm.
and they've got a new product called Moxie, which is an Internet of Things security device, which they're trying to get funded at Fundable, which is a Kickstarter-y kind of thing that I've never really seen before. This is the first time I've really come in contact with it. Have you guys ever seen
Fundable before? I think I've heard of Fundable, because I spent a fairly good amount of time at Cocoa when we talked about a lot of crowdsourcing stuff, but I've heard of Fundable, but I've never checked it out. So I'm looking at it right now, and they're
using this versus Kickstarter or Indiegogo,
which has more press. Brand. Yeah, has a little more press. Yeah.
Maybe Fundable's cheaper. I don't know. Maybe you get more money.
Maybe.
But they're going for $90,000 for this.
And they're 1,300 in. So.
Well,
they've only been at it 2 days, right?
2 days, yep.
Yeah. So they've been going for 70 days. So they've got 68 more days to go, and they've got $1,363. Right. Costs $100. And it's this little thing, hockey pucky thing that looks like sort of like the HAL 9000 computer, breeded with a Nest thermostat.
Yeah.
And works on, interestingly, instead of Wi-Fi, it works on a cellular band, which I find kind of interesting.
Well, so did I. And actually,
it works on a battery, so it doesn't need power. So that's kind of interesting, too.
So the cellular thing is actually a big deal in the commercial space, because a lot of convenience stores, for example, will have both a wired and a mobile wireless, like a Verizon M2M setup, so that if the landline if the hardwired internet goes down, they still, their security and their credit card stuff and everything continues to work. And so it's interesting to have that, but not exclusively, but but it did talk, and I'm just looking at this now. They talk about Wi-Fi, but they're just not using it at all, right?
Yeah. No, they're using a cellular chip.
Yeah.
They say that it's more reliable, and I guess it can also be used with more smartphones, maybe. But I'd say that, you know, the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth standards are pretty set these days, where you can use that. I think they are using low energy Bluetooth too. I want to say too.
Okay.
If you watch their video, they talk about low energy Bluetooth, and that's just so that after you. This is like an alarm system. So you arm it on your way out. And then when you come back on your phone, it like pairs with it and knows it's you. And so it turns itself off automatically. So that's how it's using the low energy Bluetooth.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how companies like this, and there'll be a lot of them, segue into this whole Internet of Things space. But there's stuff that seems expensive to me.
Yeah, I mean, $100 for a security system isn't bad, though. I mean, you know, so maybe there's a place for this in the market.
Yeah.
Not if you're like you, Steven. You've got the full blown, system with the smart hub, smart things hub, and all your sensors and whatnot.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what's funny? I have two digital timers that I just left in place. Both of them are acting up now. And they're set fine and they're programmed fine to turn on and turn off at the right times. And all I can think about is, oh my God, is it, you know, did somebody in my SmartThings hub somehow interact with this and through the power line, or I, you know, who knows? I have no idea why they would suddenly both go on the blink.
Sounds suspicious.
It does. I wonder if the NSA has hacked my power.
They're watching you.
they might have, maybe SmartThings has a back door.
Yeah, maybe, could maybe. Be.
Maybe they're watching the Borscht household as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I look in my underwear drawer all the time, make sure no one's in there.
So Phil is especially bummed this week.
Yeah. Phil, you know, you, and well, you know what he said to me the other day?
Where am I going to get my heroin?
Yeah. He goes,
And his cocaine's on back order, and then Silk Road shut down, and yep. He's like, man, I need my cocaine. Come on.
Well, he said to me,
party this weekend.
This was on what day, Phil? This was on Wednesday, right? And you go, I can't believe you, Steve, of all people, didn't hear about this Silk Road story.
I know.
And I hadn't, because I literally had not been on my news all day. Yeah.
When it broke, and we did the tech cocktail thing, and it was like, I made a comment about Silk Road. You looked at me like a dog looking at a ceiling fan. And it was like, you hadn't heard about this? Yeah. With this online black market.
eBay for drugs.
It's the black market eBay. Yeah, it's not just drugs. You get some good shit on there, but no, I'm sorry. I didn't know it really existed. So.
What's funny is they trade it. Instead of using PayPal, they use Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, and also and Bitcoin
behind the Tor router. So it's like, as it was all like super secret. How they found this guy is just amazing.
Well, yeah, he was basically on Stack Overflow asking questions about some technical questions for programming. Yeah. And that's basically what tilted his hand.
Well, that's how they discovered his IP address.
Yeah.
And then they were able to track him down because he went on there and he used his real name to ask the questions. Yeah. It's like, what? Are you stupid? I mean, it's just, of course, he is stupid because he's doing this. But you know what?
He's rich stupid.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting is that, and I can't find this right now, but Bitcoin dropped like a rock
after this happened, right? Yeah, because it was like, well, there's this market for Bitcoin, and now that market for Bitcoin is gone.
Wow.
You know, Bitcoin is going to, you know, became this sort of currency for money laundering.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because everybody wants essentially digital cash that can't be traced.
Yeah. So have any of you, again, I hadn't heard of Silk Road until this story broke. So have you guys ever heard of Silk Road prior to this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
And I only did because I read a bunch of security blogs. That's the only reason I had any knowledge of them whatsoever.
I was only aware of one, Dread Pirate Roberts, and that was the one from the movie. So I had no idea that. It was out there. So it was very secret. Of course,
Great. I never had a drug problem.
Great nickname too.
Isn't it though?
Yeah, it was great.
Great secret nickname.
Princess Bride reference? I mean, come on.
How bad can that be, right?
It's good. Good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, well, if you're going to be a crook, you might as well go with some flair like he did.
Yep.
Right. Well,
but if you're a crook, don't use your real name and don't go on Stack Overflow.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least using your real name. Yeah. Darn crowdsourcing. I hate that.
Well, you know, so they were able to find him, right? Even though the guy was using the Tor network.
Right.
Because he used his real name and so forth. So they were able to backtrack somehow and discover this guy. Well, so it turns out some more Edward Snowden documents have been released, and that the NSA has figured out a bunch of ways to stain the user agent for the Tor browser, which is based on Firefox. You know, it's based on the Gecko engine. So that they can identify people. Plus, if they're just running Tor and using their regular browser, they can do cookie matching. So if you've been to a site, they actually buy ads on Google and they place cookies on your browser based on where you go. And then if you come back, even though you're using the Tor browser, then they can do cookie matching and then know who you are, because they look at the original IP and then they look at the Tor IP, and then they can start to do some forensic backtracking. It's right. Like, oh my God, seriously?
That's pretty sneaky.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But so
I'm sure you're going to be first in line here, Steve, to pick up one of these new decentral devices that John McAfee is talking about.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really read much about that. I mean, have you really looked at that?
No, I read the story that was in the
Mercury
News. And he was at some sort of conference and he was talking about this thing. And it's basically like an anonymizing appliance that you carry with you and you plug in. So he's not very specific about it, but coming from, you know, the crazy John McAfee, I mean, he might have the resources and the vision to actually pull off something like this.
Well,
I mean, he does know security.
So have you?
Or he did back in the 90s or 80s.
Right, right. But do you know, or have you ever heard of Tails? Tails, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a live operating system that you can boot from a flash drive. And it's essentially a completely secure, and it uses Tor exclusively. And so you can walk in with your regular laptop and reboot in using this flash and do all the covert activities you want to do and then log off.
Wow.
And so I'm trying to figure out what McAfee's going to do that's going to be better than that.
I think he's just going to make it into an appliance that is easy for people to use. That's what it sounds like. Anyway.
Okay. Okay.
We'll see. Maybe he's not played out. Maybe he's, this will be a second big company that he founds. Who knows?
Yeah. 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 Well, again, it's all about timing, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Seems to be, and he seems to be like he's okay. I thought he was a little nutty before. But he seems like he's, you know, maybe leaving Belize was good for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what other gadgets are coming out?
Well, Dell, I put this in because Dell is coming out again with tablets, but they're doing kind of an interesting thing. One is some of them are Windows-based to compete with the Surface tablet, and then the others are really super low-cost Android tablets. So, and you know, Dell has not been able to crack the mobile phone or the tablet space, but they have, you know, a history of making really good handheld, you know, like pocket PC based things way back, you know, like in the 90s and early aughts. So, you know, I wouldn't count them out. I thought it was sort of interesting that they're coming out and they're hedging their bets with both Windows and Android.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Well, they've done a great job in the past of going in and creating real appliances that they can do major business with. I mean, if you walk into any, virtually any hospital, for example, you'll see all Dell monitors. You'll see a lot of the Dell, those small footprint PCs. And they can just turn the engine on and make a ton of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just at the my doctor here this week, and they have exactly what you said. And what was funny is it boots up to look at some x-rays, and it's Windows XP.
Right, yeah, right.
Exactly.
I think of what? Because it's funny, because this is a clinic that was built, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. So
still, you know, XP, yeah.
It's still XP, which is hilarious. And then I was at Walmart, you know, the other day, and one of their point of sale, like, display things was crashed, and it was running Windows 2000.
Oh my God.
I'm thinking at freaking Walmart, they're still running Windows 2000.
Wow. That's very, very scary. Well, I went for my wife's birthday. I went over to Bachman's to buy flowers, and the woman boots up.
And they're
up.
Running Windows 3.11. Right?
Just about. No, but their point of sale system was in Windows XP, and there was an error message that popped up, and she goes, "Oh, I just hate when that happens." I said, "Well, you're not going to have to worry too much, because Windows XP support's going away in December is the last
You
month.
Made her day, didn't you, Steve?
Well, no, but she goes, "Oh, so that's why they're going to make us learn a new program, because they're rewriting this program, you know, this point of sale program." So hopefully people, you know, even the hospitals, because it's like you say, Tim, it's ubiquitous in healthcare.
Windows XP. It's the cockroach of operating systems. You can't kill it.
Kill
you
it.
Can't kill it.
Yeah.
It's still around.
Used by Keith Richards.
Right.
Yeah. No, Richards is more of a Linux guy, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
He's probably running Ubuntu.
Well,
probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's Keith. He's got that kind of time.
So, you know, Steve Jobs had said that he was going to reinvent. Hey, just hang on. He said he was going to reinvent the whole TV space in that Walter Isaacson's biography.
Yeah, he cracked the code.
But, you know, Comcast came out with their new DVR, which apparently has been crashing nationwide. And then Amazon is going to have something this fall,
yeah,
right?
Curious. This is a curious one. They're going to take on Roku and Apple TV and, you know, every set-top box with one of their own, which I don't know. I find it kind of interesting because the only set-top box that supports instant video is the Roku, I think. Although it's not on Apple TV, right? So you can't watch your Amazon Prime on Apple TV.
No, correct? but what everybody's doing, if they can't get on the Apple TV, is they're doing AirPlay.
Meaning what Steve is doing. Yeah, but
well, no. You can use to do that.
So okay. You can use AirPlay to push videos up, but that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So I guess they figure, I think some of the smart TVs have their app too, but it's not as widely available as the Kindle Reader, for instance, or some of the other Amazon programs. So I guess this is just a way that guarantees that their ecosystem will go on the TV. So we'll see how it stacks up. But that, you know, that's a very crowded space, and it's like Apple and Roku pretty much dominate that at this point. And then there's a bunch of Android based, you know, set top solutions, which are either like super junky, right off the boat from China, no name brands, or there's stuff like the Ouya. Game system, which is mostly a game system, but you can also play Netflix and Hulu and other stuff on it. So that's another area where Android is sort of pushing in on the set-top box, and not to mention what they're going to do with Chromecast. So,
well, you know,
Phil, this week you got Hulu Plus on Chromecast.
Yeah, I don't use Hulu Plus, but that's okay. You know, they're building it out. That's all I can say.
Huh. But, yeah, that for me to get one of those things, they're going to have to do an awful lot, you know, because I already have like, you know, 14 devices that play Netflix that are hooked to the TV. So, you know, all right. The Blu-ray players I've got have that. a Roku, the TiVo. So Chromecast is a great idea and I want to get one, but there's really no reason to get one, you know?
Well, but well, you know what I find interesting is going to be interesting to see how everybody, you know, all this jockeying for position, how everybody is going to make certain choices based on, you know, some killer app. There's going to be some killer TV app, or there's going to be somebody that, you know, one of these players that ties up the networks, and people are going to say, yeah, I got to have that one. And they're going to start to switch and move toward it. But who that's going to be, I have no idea.
Well, there was a story, which I'll try to find and stick in the notes, that I saw this week, that Apple hired someone that was like a big cable company guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did see that. Yeah.
So there's rumor that perhaps, you know, they're going to do some sort of a cable boxy kind of a deal.
Yep.
So they compete head to head with TiVo, I guess.
Yeah. Jean-François Mulet.
Excuse me?
His name is Jean-François Mulet.
Does he know Hilbert Joly?
Oh, I'm sure. All those French guys know each other.
Yeah. They'll hang together.
Yeah. That reminds me of the story when we first went to England in 1971, and we were standing in the tube, and there's this British gentleman there, and he notices that we're, you know, Americans. And he asks us this casually, do you know Frank Sinatra?
Wait a minute. They knew you were Americans even though you called it the tube? Come on.
Well, you know. I didn't. I was just a kid, but I still remember this to this day where he asked my dad, he just says, do you know Frank Sinatra? Just like, you know, hey, do you know who so-and-so? Yeah. And he sort of assumed that all Americans know, we have to say, yeah, we know of Frank Sinatra. We have listened to his music, but we don't know Frank.
You should have asked the guy, did you know Marie Antoinette before she got beheaded?
That would be sort of like, you know, hey, do you know, Winston Churchill, do you know that guy? You know,
well, yeah, you know, it was one of the fun things. So when my dad and I went to Germany in 97, he was on one side of the plane and I was on the other, or in the center, and I was sitting next to a German family. And so the dad and I got to talking, and he admitted that when they had originally planned the trip, that they wanted to see New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles, and they were going to rent a car and drive. And then they realized quickly, it's a little too far. We're not gonna be able to do all that in 2 weeks.
So, yeah.
Oh my God, how funny.
Anyway, so Phil, what's coming up this coming week?
Lots going on.
Mini demo.
That's right. Yeah.
I actually got a ticket this time. So
did you really
show up? I did.
I didn't.
You did.
There were like 20 some odd left when I went in, and it's on my Eventbrite and on my phone.
Yep.
Planning on going.
I'm going myself. So
sorry, all right, I'll see you there.
I usually try to grab.
He's gonna be skunk.
Yeah, I'll figure out how to get there.
We'll figure out.
I mean, Graham's gonna be there because Mr. Moneybags pays us $100 a year.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
it's because of all those troll doll sales.
Exactly.
That's right.
He's got the money.
Coco's Uptown location is open, and they're having a big open house on the 10th from 6 to 9. Can check out that space.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually kind of a fun location.
Yep, and very close at hand is the Mima Summit.
Yeah, that's right.
That's kind of sneaks up on you, doesn't it?
It does, and you can see all of this online at minovate.com. We keep our little event thing up to date.
That's right.
So hopefully you can check it out. So anything else for the good of the order, gentlemen?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we could talk about the iPad rumors and that cool article about Steve Jobs, about the pain building the iPhone, but let's not.
No, let's save that for another time.
That's right. All right.
Are you kidding me? You're going to drop the little biscuits and you're not going to say anything about it.
Okay.
No, in fact, I'm deleting everything right now from the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, stop.
Just to make it easy for Phil.
Just leave the one about Steve Jobs, article about Let There Be an iPhone in the New York Times, because it really talks about how when he, my favorite part, when he released showed the iPhone in January of 2007, that it was basically smoke and mirrors. That the developers were sitting in, they had basically hard-coded stuff like it showing 5 bars and all that stuff. And it was literally, he had to follow an exact procedure. Otherwise the phone would crash. I mean, it was just a cool story, but it really showed. And this one developer that they talk about, he said he gained 50 pounds during the development of the iPhone.
That's a lot of Mountain Dew and Ding Dongs, dude.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's a lot of Mountain Dew and Ding Dongs. But, yep. That's a very similar story. Did you guys ever see the movie Tucker, A Man in His Dreams? I think it's
what yes. Yeah. Fabulous movie.
Very much like that.
Jeff Bridges.
An underrated Coppola movie.
Yeah, very underrated and a great, great movie to check out. So if you get a chance to see that, but wow. We always look at our show notes before we start and, you know, I thought we were going to be spending hours on Apple stuff. Now it's just minutes.
Say, by the way, I just have to say one thing.
Yes, sir.
Last night, a meme started on Twitter and the hashtag, I'll put a link in the show notes, add a word, ruin a movie. and people were adding words to movie names.
Movie titles, yeah.
Stuff like Never Finding Nemo and and Sexual Predator and Three Men and a Dead Baby.
Oh, my.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Victoria's Secrets. I mean, just on and on and on. Some of them were just absolutely like Schindler's Grocery List. I mean, just on and on and on. Anyway,
that's a great meme.
It was just a hilarious meme. I mean, some of them, I just burst out laughing, and I was up till like 1:30 last night. I know people are going to go, wait a minute, it's a Friday night, Boris. Yeah, but I get up to do this thing, right?
Right.
And but I was just trolling these things for about an hour.
Were there any spoilers in there?
No, I don't think so.
Soylent Green is made of people.
Yeah, but that's not one word.
Carlito's feminine way.
There you go.
Oh God, Batman Begins knitting. Oh God. Anyway,
so is that hashtagged at all or?
Yeah, it is. I'll put a hashtag in the show notes. Add a word, ruin a movie is the hashtag.
That's the hashtag.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Makes up a good chunk of your 140 characters right there.
So to keep it current, you'd have Gravity Sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Add a word, ruin a movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Gravity is supposed to be pretty good, so I'm going to go see it today.
Yeah, I think we're all going to go see it.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, exactly.
We'll have extensive reviews next week on the podcast.
That's exactly right. And hopefully an Etsy address for Graham's.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
Got to get it out of Graham.
Yep.
So listen, you guys have a great weekend. We will see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, guys. My heart.
once before I leave. Why don't